9 churchgoers are dead in Charleston, South Carolina, after a shooting spree at an historic black church that police are calling a hate crime. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. And now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we'll take your calls as police search for the suspect in a deadly shooting rampage at a Charleston AME church, the oldest one in the South. Get on the line now with your thoughts and questions and comments at 549-2937. Then later, travel expert Judy Wells and The Spectator with all this weekend's events, plus musician Jenny Reed. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, police and federal law enforcement agencies in the midst of an all-out manhunt at this time for the gunman they say is responsible for killing 9 people in a Charleston, South Carolina church last night in what police are calling a hate crime. The young white male suspect opened fire on a Bible study group at the historic black Emmanuel AME Church on Calhoun Street. That is the oldest AME church in the South. He killed 8 people. 2 others were rushed to the hospital, where 1 died. Now, this morning, we had planned to discuss that strange story of Rachel Dolezal, the woman who stepped down from a post with the NAACP after her parents revealed she's not African-American, but actually Caucasian. But we're going to pivot just a bit to discuss this breaking news first. Dr. Jeffrey N. Wilder is a sociologist and scholar specializing in diversity and race relations. She's an associate professor at the University of North Florida and joins us now with her thoughts about this tragedy in Charleston. Dr. Wilder, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And we invite our callers right now to share their thoughts and feelings after this shooting rampage at an historic AME in Charleston. On the line with your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your Facebook comments. And so, Dr. Wilder, let's discuss what we know now. A young white male, approximately 21 to 25 years old, being sought by police in Charleston. They say that before he opened fire at the Emmanuel Church, he was actually taking part in a Bible study group. That's what we know so far.
So senseless and so sad. So, yeah, we've got this individual who is showing up to participate in, we think, the Bible study, and then does something just so horrific. And it just, it's so saddening. It's terrible. It's downright terrible and tragic. And I really hope that they find this individual as soon as possible and bring him to justice.
Let's talk about just the thoughts about this church. The significance of a shooting like this happening at the AME Church in Charleston, which dates from 1816, it's the oldest AME church in the Southeast, and it's long been the site of racial resistance and revolt against slavery and oppressive Jim Crow policies in the South. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. So you've got this sort of, this wonderful institution that's got, you know, sort of steeped in a rich, wonderful history of advocacy and activism. Even today, you know, some of the folks who are in the community recognize this church and the pastor and the people who are part of this church still doing so many things to transform and push forward, you know, notions of justice and inequality. And to see this happen is just, it's, again, horrific. It's tragic. It's senseless. And to think about, you know, 50 plus years ago, something very similar happened in Alabama with those young girls who died. And so just to think, you know, anyone sort of thinking about this notion of us being post-racial, it seems like every time we turn around, we're reminded of something that looks like history.
We'll go to your calls on the shooting rampage in Charleston in just a moment at 549-2937. The FBI, local Charleston police calling this a hate crime. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. We still don't know, you know, obviously this individual hasn't been apprehended, but, you know, all things point toward that. And hopefully with this being sort of categorized in that way, they'll have a lot more resources to work forward in bringing this man to justice.
The Justice Department says it will open a hate crime investigation into a shooting that happened last night at an historically black church in Charleston that killed 9 people. We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. We had initially asked you to come in and talk about the story of Rachel Dolezal, an NAACP chair in the Pacific Northwest, who was forced to step down after it was revealed that she's actually Caucasian. Mm-hmm. race-related incidents, tragedies, and just bizarre stories pop up in this country with regularity.
All the time now, it seems that, you know, every time we turn around, race has been inserted into the national conversation and discourse yet again. And, you know, in some ways, you know, thinking about the NAACP, it's almost kind of nice and a little bit refreshing a little bit in a way to get back to these really poignant issues. Now, again, the work that Ms. Dolezal did in her sort of just short tenure in the NAACP is definitely, we can applaud that and appreciate her work around advocacy and sort of anti-racism. But again, you know, the manipulation and the deceit that she, you know, tried to do for a number of years, it definitely diminishes the work that she says she was setting out to do.
Mm-hmm. And let's go to your calls right now about the shooting in Charleston last night during a Bible study group. Police are searching for the gunman right now after 9 people died in this tragedy. We want your calls and thoughts at 549-2937. Richard on the South Side. Hello, Richard. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The number one, I'm speechless about the church tragedy simply because I'm such an advocate of history and have been saying at the top of my lungs, if we forget our history, we're doomed to repeat it. But what troubles me more than anything is the fact that we're wrestling right now with whether to call this a hate crime. It's been reported that none of the national news media showed up with a live camera. No one is mentioning that this pastor was a state senator. And I don't even want to say I hate to say it. I will say it. If this was a white church, a white state senator, the right-wing media would be all over this, and God forbid that it was a young Muslim who did it, it would be called a terrorist attack and an assassination. We diminish and have diminished black people in this nation for years, and we have done absolutely nothing to lift up black people. I just happen to be black, but I could say that if I wasn't. We don't focus on issues of importance, and I thank God that we're no longer talking about a white woman who faked being black. And by the way, there is nothing redeeming about the fact that she did some good while she was in that fake role, because if it had been a doctor pretending to operate on white people, no one would say, well, he saved 8 or 9 people while he was pretending to be a doctor. So what we need to do is this. Now that we have this opportunity to raise the conversation of race up to a level of respect, let's please try to get race to where it's respected, black race, where it's respected as any other race. This is a terrorist attack by a young white terrorist by the same group of people that have been terrorizing black people for hundreds of years, extremist, racist, and we need to call it what it is, a racist terrorist attack. And I just pray for those families, and I'm almost in tears over it, but it's time that we stop the conversation talking about race and black folk as it's the least desired color in the crayon box. Thank you for taking my call.
That's Richard on the South Side. Dr. Wilder.
Very emotional, and you know, there's so many things about what this caller said. It's really important to think about and understand the context from which he's talking about. So, you know, the sort of banner slogan for last year is this notion that Black Lives Matter, and I think what Richard is pointing out is that we really need to make sure that the focus stays on, or is just as important as what's happening in Charleston, is sort of does not lose the importance of other things that we've seen so far. So I think that's important, and he also brought up the notion of terrorism, domestic terrorism. And sometimes it is hard for us to sort of recognize that and really, you know, look at this as...
Do you agree that the accused shooter should be called a domestic terrorist?
Well, I definitely think it is terrorism. Absolutely. And we've seen, you know, similar cases in, you know, not so distant history of people walking into mosques and synagogues and shooting people. And that's definitely terrorism on our soil. Absolutely. And of course, we're still waiting to hear more details because this is still breaking.
That's true. Yeah, we do need to point out, we don't know the details yet. We don't know what motivated this shooter. We don't know. We're hoping to know soon, though, and we want your calls at 549-2937. Jeff on the South Side. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes. Thank you so much, Melissa, and thanks for addressing this issue. I I was brought to tears many times this morning just reading the news and following this. My twin boys were born in Charleston, and I lived there for a few years and taught in the schools. And to think of something like this, such a heinous crime, made all the more heinous by occurring in the Bible study. It just shows how far we still need to go and how much work needs to be done for understanding and removing hate from our society and from our institutions, and making sure that we educate people about what they can do to prevent these crimes. And obviously, I know a lot will be done to research and look at how this came about, and I think it's just an awful case of how do we know when something like this might occur? How can we prepare for it? How can we prevent it? What can we do to make sure that people remain safe, especially in houses of worship, and these crimes can be prevented in the future? And again, my thoughts and prayers go out to all the families affected by this.
Jeff, thank you so much for your call. And the fact that this occurred in a church during Bible study, Dr. Wilder, the person that police are hunting allegedly sat there for over an hour pretending to take part in the Bible study group. I think that element of the story is what is so so heartbreaking for people, the feeling that even in a church, folks aren't safe.
Absolutely. And that's the place where people go to worship and to get solace. And, you know, we don't think of, now we're used to, of course, when we go to an airport, there being, you know, security checkpoints. And so we recognize that. But we don't think about that in sort of the places that we consider to be the most sacred. And I guarantee that these folks who were at the Bible study, you know, last evening were, you know, welcoming this individual with open arms and sharing their faith. And so to think of someone who can hear that and to be in that presence in this wonderful place for an hour and still manage to go through with what he did speaks to, you know, his mental capacity and his level of irrationality.
And lots of calls as we discuss the tragedy in Charleston this morning. We'll get to your tweets and other social media comments in just a moment. We invite you to join us at 549-2937. Gary is in St. Augustine. Hi, Gary. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I'm just wondering why there hasn't been more talk about gun control with all that's happened recently in this country. All the other industrialized countries that have stronger gun control measures, and all of them do, have much lower gun murder rates. And I don't know if people realize it, but there's been over 100 school shootings since the massacre up there in Connecticut. I think it's about 125. I mean, there have to be stronger gun laws. It's proven in other countries to be effective. I don't know why everyone is so unable to discuss it. That's basically what I have to say. Thank you.
Gary, thanks. Jeffrey Ann.
Yeah, I think Gary brings up an excellent point. So we've got a lot of sort of dynamics happening here. We've got issues of race, we've got issues of justice, and of course we've got the issues of gun control, which still, you know, speaks to where we still need to go as a nation as far as legislation. This individual should not have been able to walk into a church and, you know, armed and be able to do what he was able to do. And of course, I'm sure we'll, you know, as the details continue to unfold, we'll probably recognize how easy it was for him to gain access to whatever, you know, guns that he used.
And we invite calls on both sides of that issue, by the way. We want all of your opinions on the show. Lots of tweets coming in about the tragedy in Charleston. John tweets the show, "The shooting of black communities is becoming the new school shooting trend. When will this stop?" Joe, "The state government is saying they'll never understand what caused this while still flying the Confederate flag. It's both ironic and insulting." A tweet from Michael, "I heard that the state senator who was shot was the youngest African American elected to the state house in South Carolina." A public official among the victims.
Yeah, so the pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinky, was just 41 years old. And so, you know, we have to continue to remember this while we're talking about these issues. We need to recognize that, you know, there are people this morning who have lost loved ones that were here with us just yesterday. And a family has lost their, not only has a, you know, a church lost their community, but a family has lost their father, you know, children now, you know, and it's coming up, you know, the Father's Day weekend. So it's definitely important for us to recognize that people have lost their lives.
Let's go to Greg in Jacksonville. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's so tragic and personal. My family and I vacationed there from all over the country. We went to Charlotte 2 years ago because of the historical significance for African Americans. And we visited that church and prayed and had service there. And hearing the news this morning, I had originally thought about making some comments. But after listening here, the human toll and the hate that exists around this world is just overwhelming. And I just want to ask everyone to just be in prayer for all of the families today. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Hunter in Jacksonville. Hunter, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
What happened in South Carolina is just beyond appalling for a fact. Being a student of history and finishing up my master's in history and everything like that, if there's one thing that history's taught us, it's just that we can't go forward unless we look from the past. Now, what I don't care however politically correct or incorrect this sounds, but in order to call this a hate crime, I think that if you murder somebody, you obviously have a hate towards somebody. Isn't every crime a hate crime? So, with this being said, the gun control also that came up with the fact is if somebody did have a gun or able to defend themselves, then maybe we could put a stop to this kind of things like that. But I think that in any case, in fact, is that with the media portraying it, this is a hate crime. It is a hate crime, but also the fact that it diminishes the fact that every single person that is murdered by somebody else, I don't care who you are, what your race or ethnicity or religion is, it still should all be considered a hate crime and not just pushed onto one section of people or one section of just something happening to another group of people. It's just everything's a hate crime when it comes to murder. It's just disgusting.
Thank you, Hunter. Let's talk about what defines, and I appreciate his comments. Let's talk about what, in terms of the authorities use for criteria, what does define a hate crime?
Well, you know, sociologist, not a criminologist, and don't have the legal background, but I do know that in the history of hate crimes, we definitely see people who have had horrible things happen to them because of who they are and their social place and location in society. So typically when we see hate crimes, of course, you know, we just talked about the bombing of the church in Alabama in the 1960s. So
the Birmingham bombing that killed four little girls.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing that we we've heard initially from some of these reports is that the gunman, reportedly left someone alive to tell the story. So he purposely let someone live so that individual could tell the story. And so part of me believes that that leads to this notion that, yes, there was definitely some strategy behind what he was doing, and there was also definitely some hate fueled by what he was doing as well. And when if this person ever comes forward to talk about this, then that can definitely be corroborated. But this notion of, you know, him purposely choosing this particular community, this church, and then again leaving someone alive to tell the story speaks to the fact that, you know, something definitely was amiss, and there definitely does speak in my mind to some level of hatred.
Lots of calls, emails, and tweets. Comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Here's one from one listener. Charleston is my hometown. My heart breaks for this tragedy. American culture has accepted violence toward black people. Tamir Rice in Ohio, Sanford, Florida, McKinney, Texas. When we accept that it's okay for this to happen one at a time, it's only a step away from what happened at this church. We are getting lots of emotional feedback this morning to the deadly shooting rampage and tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina, at the oldest AME church in the South. Let's go now to Mike in Pontevedra. Go ahead, Mike, and thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Mike. I'm in Pontevedra. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can. Yeah, we sure can. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay. I just, of course, this is a terrible, terrible
tragedy, and I just wanted to comment on the on your guest assertion that this may be domestic violence. I would not classify, domestic terrorism, to repeat that. Terrorism is born from an organization. It's not an individual act from someone that may have mental issues or a mental condition. It could be domestic terrorism, but I think that needs to be investigated to assert that it is, and that's why the federal government wants to get involved. But unless they're part of another organization that has a creed or a purpose, an intent to make a statement about this, it's merely an individual act by a sick individual, and he was fully responsible for it. You know, there's hardly anything anyone could have done about it. If somebody wants to perpetrate that kind of crime without warning, you know, there was nothing there for them to have any defense. So, yeah, it's just a terrible, terrible thing, and the individual will be held accountable in the eyes of God. I think we need to talk about as a nation what we can do to help these people out. I lived in Charleston for 3 years. It's a great community. I loved it there. It's very cultural. Black and whites get along great. It's not some divisive community. It's been a history, you know, ever since slavery. And I think as a nation, what can we do to help this church out so they can overcome this? Because a lot of people are affected. Is there going to be some sort of fund set up to help these people financially overcome this and investigate?
Thank you, Mike.
That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Mike. That's Mike in Ponte Vedra. Dr. Wilder.
Well, I think, you know, I certainly appreciate Mike's comment, but the important piece to understand here is that the authorities have named this as a hate crime. And so they've been able to, you know, sort of leverage some resources attached to that. So there's something about the case that the authorities, the local authorities there in Charleston, and also the federal authorities believe that this is definitely connected to a hate crime. So I think it's not just, you know, individuals sort of thinking, oh, this might be. If the federal government and the local authorities have sort of believe that this is a hate crime, I think it's important that we look in that direction as well. The other thing to sort of understand about Charleston and South Carolina and, you know, things in the South, yes, there might be, you know, wonderful instances of, you know, people getting along, but we also have to remember what happened in North Charleston just a few months ago. This police officer, who we all saw on video, you know, shooting this unarmed man. And that's also important for us to think about sort of the context, perhaps, of race within this community.
Bob in Jacksonville. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. Hey, Bob, do me a favor. Turn down your radio, and we'll go back to you in just a moment. William at the Beaches. Hey, William, good morning. Okay, we lost that call. Are you there, William?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I pretty much go along with your previous caller in that I think it's just become, you know, a popular, I don't want to say popular trend, but you might say, it's all too quick to draw conclusions that this is terrorism. Even if the authorities say that, that's just kind of their automatic stance, I think, all too often. We don't know if this individual did, what his motivations were. This could be like a home-style shooting that happened out in Colorado or whatever that precipitated why he did this. And your speaker there, you know, kind of mentioned that they, by saying it's a hate crime, it opens up these resources and everything, and that may be their motivation for doing this, because they do want to get the individual. I'm not saying this isn't a horrific crime, but we don't know for a fact that this is a terrorism case, and I don't think we should be saying that it is terrorism until we know for a fact that it is, a certain fact, not speculative, and that's all I got to say.
Thank you, William. It's striking to note how the use of that word is provoking strong reactions from callers, and not surprisingly, people who are African American are asserting very strongly this morning that they want to use this terminology to define this crime. So once again, we come back to a divide in this nation, Dr. Wilder, in how we see these issues.
Absolutely. And I think this speaks to, again, you know, as you mentioned, reflects the broader things. Some people want to sidestep and don't want to go there immediately to say that this is a hate crime. And other folks, you know, definitely want to go there. So I think it's really important for us, again, to recognize that people have lost their lives. There are people who are without loved ones today. And I think that there is a very strong possibility that the reason why these folks are without their loved ones is connected to race. That's important for us to think about and important for us to understand.
Bob in Jacksonville. Hello, Bob. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for holding, Bob. What are your thoughts?
Okay. I actually wanted to ask a question for Dr. Wilder, but first I'd like to comment on a couple of previous callers who said that, you know, a single individual is not an act of terrorism. I disagree. You can represent a movement, but act by yourself. Consider Timothy McVeigh. You know, he, with a little bit of help from Nichols and whatever, look, you know, he wasn't actually operating, you know, as a member of an organization. He was representing a movement. So that's still terrorism, even if he did it solo. Okay? And the question I wanted to ask Dr. Wilder, how do you think that all these right-wing bloviators that go around, you know, talk like LaPierre, for example, that, you know, insist on more guns. You know, you can't be a true American hero unless you pack heat. Do you think this has anything to do with what appears to be an increase in, you know, political violence?
Well, you know, I appreciate your comments, and I can't, you know, we can't say for certain. We still don't know what motivated this individual. I can say that, as other callers have said, and as we've talked about already, there seems to be an increased amount of gun violence in our society. It seems very easy and accessible for folks to get upset with someone or get upset with something or some ideology and resort to violence, particularly gun violence. And so I think that needs to change. That's the extreme piece here. And again, until we know, until this person is apprehended, until he reveals what his motives are, you know, all we can do at this point is speculate.
That's right. And it is important to note that, of course, as journalists, all of us here at WJCT are trained to wait for the facts. We don't know all the facts yet. And it is important to stress that. Neither do law enforcement authorities. What we know is that a young white male opened fire at an historically black church, killing 9 people. We don't know the identity of this person yet. We don't know the particulars of the investigation yet. We're still hoping to get those details today because this tragedy has affected so many people so strongly. More tweets and calls coming in. Ashley, if you say, and this is on Twitter, if you say these people want to commit crimes, they will, no matter what the laws are. You're wrong. Gun laws could end this. Julie tweets the show, plenty of organizations out there have a creed or intent to hurt African Americans. Regardless of the intent, the effect is the same. It's terror. But we want to get a few more calls in before we wrap this up and move on to a few other segments. Lots of people waiting on hold still to join the show. Let's go now to Bruce on the north side. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you all? Yeah, I just want to comment. You know, it's just atrocious. I knew nothing about it until I heard you all speaking. I kind of scanned it online. But, you know, I think we have to be careful, you know, just because this I don't even want to call him a man, this one committed this to his white and the people he killed were black, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's racially motivated. I mean, you know, I think we also, and I have a question about Dr. Wilder, where's the outrage when the young black men kill other young black men? There should be the same level of outrage because these families who lose loved ones to anyone, they feel the same level of grief and hurt. So our young black men killing each other shouldn't be given a free pass because they're black and they're killing someone else black. So it should be the same level of outrage that I see any time a white cop or someone white commits an act against someone black. So we have to be careful with this race thing. We really do. We've come a long way in this country. We have a long way to go, of course, with race, but we can't every time someone white does something to someone black, it's racially motivated. We have to be careful with that.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Bruce on the north side.
Bruce, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I do think it's important that we recognize the difference between structural racism and institutional and individual racism. So when an individual commits another act against another individual, and as you mentioned, you know, black individuals are killing each other all the time. And so, yes, there is an issue with that. However, I take a much larger issue in my mind when we see police, large numbers of police and institutions killing black males. So there is a difference there, and I think it's important to highlight that. And it also, it's a somewhat, we don't want to let what's happening right now and, you know, let other sort of common narratives interfere with what's happening right now in Charleston. So, of course, you know, black-on-black crime is an issue. White-on-white crime is an issue as well. But what has happened here, at least, again, what we know, or at least what's being reported thus far, is that there is some issue connected to a hate crime here in what's happened in Charleston.
One more call. Omar in Springfield. Hi, Omar. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Okay, well, I'm just listening to the call to the show this morning, and I hear... You know, I think someone already kind of addressed on it, but the common theme of that this isn't terrorism because it is a, it could also be a single act, you know, and that's true. But as Americans and in post, you know, kind of in the post 9/11 world, who's to say, you know, we've kind of defined what terrorism is, and it can't be one person that, even if they don't represent, you know, a group or a large force, that does not necessarily not make it not terrorism, because it is inflicting terror upon a certain group. And then also, I guess my bigger question or bigger issue that I think is not really being addressed a lot is that really since Civil Rights Movement, you know, we haven't really ever stopped and wanted to, I guess, understand each other as different races, because we are different people. And although we kind of live in this country as one, you know, kind of this homogenized approach may not necessarily be, it's not working, obviously. So, you know, maybe it's time to sit back and have a realistic view of what makes us different and what ways that we can come together that are common ground, and not necessarily, you know, just going with this, oh, we're all the same, nothing is different, you know, I don't know. So that's kind of my thesis.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Omar. Lots of feedback this morning. Your final thoughts?
Well, again, I think it's important that we recognize and honor the lives of the individuals who just lost their lives last evening. The reports are still coming in. I think that regardless of whether or not people agree, if it's terror or a hate crime or what have you, there still leaves us with some really sort of recurring questions within our society about race, justice, gun control, and what we can do to all live and to appreciate everyone's humanity in the same way.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
UNF's Dr. Jeffrey Ann Wilder in studio, and much more still ahead later. The Spectator with Weekend Events, performer Jenny Reed, and up next, our own Judy Wells. We'll be right back.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4,
uh-huh.
And it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen tomorrow.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
The great online auction is back. June 19th through 29th, shop from the comfort of your home and find exciting items at a fraction of retail. From barbecue to vacation getaways, we have something for everyone at every budget. All proceeds benefit WJCT. Log on to auction.wjct.org and start shopping today.
Welcome back, and geez, it's hot out there. Well, if you're hankering for a little summer getaway to cool off from our Florida temperatures, our travel expert has a few ideas for you. Judy Wells is back in studio now with a look at, this sounds good, Virginia's Eastern Shore.
Oh, it's beautiful. I spent a couple of weeks up there recently.
Yeah?
And all of coastal Virginia. Jamestown, Portsmouth, Hampton, of course, Williamsburg, everybody knows about that. But coastal Virginia is just, the Eastern Shore is amazing. Chincoteague, every little girl who's ever read the story of Misty wants to go to Chincoteague and see the pony swimming.
Yeah.
And that Chincoteague is a charming place. It's small, but for a town that maybe if they count the ducks, which have right of way.
is that right?
They might have 7,000 residents. They get 40,000 to 50,000 people
every summer
on that little spit for the pony penning.
Oh, my goodness. So it's a big touristy area.
It's not a touristy area. It's touristy, but it's beach touristy. And
okay.
It's old beach touristy as opposed to
and
new
the Virginia
beach
communities are a little different, aren't they, than what we're used to?
They are. They're very laid back. They're natives, by and large, who live there. They've been there all the time. They come oystermen, what they call watermen, who fished, oystered, clammed. They're there because they want to be. They can't imagine living anywhere else. But the pony, if you want to go, the pony penning, the pony swim is July 29th and July 30th. They auction off the foals. The carnivals throughout July, the weekends in July and up to August. Cape Charles for adults is a lovely little town. It has a free beach, charming B&Bs, and my favorite is Hotel St. Charles, which is downtown and very contemporary, right across from the Shanty, which is a super seafood restaurant. In Hampton, you've got Fort Monroe, which has been protecting the Chesapeake Bay from 1609 until it was deactivated in 2011.
Wow.
And it's a neat underground rooms and corridors. Kids will love running through there. They also have just a wonderful carousel, a historic carousel, and a great Air and Space Museum.
Sure. So some great attractions there in Cape Charles. But anywhere in that Chesapeake Bay area, you can't really go wrong, can you?
You cannot go wrong. When you've got American history, wild ponies, great beaches and bays, you just can't go wrong.
Yeah, it's stunning. Now, what's the best way, if we're traveling up to Virginia, what's the best travel itinerary, Judy Wells?
I would say you start at Colonial Williamsburg.
Okay.
You can spend at least 2 days there. The kids, you can take them to Busch Gardens. It's perfectly beautiful. It gets the prettiest park in the nation award consistently.
Uh-huh.
Leave your car at the Williamsburg Visitor Center. Take the shuttle buses. They'll get you where you need to go, and you don't have to worry about parking, which you're not going to find. And then Jamestown is interesting. It's America's second oldest continuously occupied and the first British settlement.
Yeah. Not as old as our St. Augustine.
One has to be careful now with St. Augustine celebrating its 450th
year.
York, nearby Yorktown, is where those scrappy patriots with the French defeated the British. And then they've got the Jamestown settlement where they settled in finally. But historic Jamestown, where they first started, the settlers first came, they thought it was lost. They thought it was under the water. 12 years ago, they found it.
Get out of here.
And they've been digging it up ever since. And
they
have found amazing things. And it's a really nifty place to go. The kids will love that.
Yeah, it's a history lesson for your kids to take them
through.
It is,
but they're having fun at the same time,
exactly.
So they don't notice it so much.
Right.
Along with St. Augustine, they're going to celebrate the big 450 September 4th through the 8th. And you can keep track of all the events. I've got my Wells World. I've got all their key things. If you always wanted to go to the Galapagos, Inca, International Nature and Cultural Adventures, which has been a big player down there.
Wait a minute.
You mean
to tell me you, Judy Wells, have not been to the Galapagos Islands?
That's what I thought. To me, it's the best multi-generational destination I've ever seen. But they're doing, they have small, wonderful small ships, and they're offering $1,000 off savings
now,
on departures from September 30th to December the 10th.
And Judy is the travel person you always want to go to for any ideas and tips, insider tips on the best places in the world and the best things to visit if, once you pick a destination. Let's get the website out again.
It's Wells World. Just Google it, Wells World. You'll find it better that way. I'm in the process of changing all my sites and consolidating, and it's a mess.
That's okay.
That's not my thing. By the way, in August, you've got Tango World Cup and Festival in Buenos Aires.
Oh, just to throw that in there at the end.
So go to
Judy's website, and it's always a delight because she knows more about travel than anybody I know. Judy Wells, always a pleasure.
Thank you. Next time, it will be Nova Scotia and Maine.
I'm so jealous of you. I'm so jealous of you. We're right back.
This Friday on Closing the Loop. After coming to the area from England, Vanessa Cunningham worked in a pub, in healthcare, in real estate development, and life is getting better all the time. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Morning keynote speaker, mental health advocate Jessie Close, who wants to change how people talk and think about mental illness. An ambassador for Bring Change to Mind, a not-for-profit organization founded by Jessie's sister, actress Glenn Close. Jessie fights stigma and misunderstandings to create a clearer picture of mental disorders. Good for you. Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Welcome back. Well, local performer Jenny Reed has a new album out this weekend and a big release party Friday night. We've got a quick preview in studio right now. Jenny, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What's the name of the new album?
New album's called Cynical Romantics.
Yeah. And yeah. We have a little bit of a listen to Cynical Romantics, just to give people a preview of your party at Jackrabbit's tomorrow night. Take a quick listen.
I'm broken. Your walls are so high-flying, but I'm mad as long as you don't mind. She can fix me, just let me in. It lasts in a cool romantic begin.
Sounds great. Big party at Jackrabbit's for you Friday night.
Yeah.
Now, getting a full-length studio album done is no small feat, so congratulations,
Thank you, first of all,
on that.
Thank you a bunch.
Yeah.
It's really stressful getting to this point where the album's already done and all I have to worry about is getting on stage, because I think that's the easy part for me.
This is the first time you'll be performing this live with a full backup band,
right? Yeah.
Excited?
Nervous and excited, but it's a bunch of musicians that I love and trust, so I'm super excited to share the stage with them.
And are you going to be touring to support this at all?
Absolutely.
Where are you going?
I don't have dates totally submitted right now, but in the fall, Jenny Reed will be on the road.
She's Jacksonville's own Jenny Reed. remember that name.
Definitely.
And go to jennyreedmusic.com. Jenny's new album, Cynical Romantics, drops. It's actually out now. I know, I'm so hip, aren't I? It's out now at iTunes and Amazon. The album party, release party, is tomorrow night at Jackrabbit's in San Marco, kicking off at 8 o'clock. Jenny, have a great show.
Thank you.
And get out and enjoy that. Live music. Finally, this hour, lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. here, as she is every Thursday, to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today.
Yay.
Doesn't Jenny Reed sound great?
I know. She was doing some stuff out there. I just find it fascinating. Like, she was playing and talking. I'm like, I can't even.
Her album has dropped.
I
know the lingo.
I'm really hip.
I'm hip. I'm so hip.
Let me just interject.
Sean Birch
explained
that to me.
Yeah. Okay, let me just interject. Someone said to me the other day, they think my theme music is stale.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Then maybe we need to redo it.
Well, I love Pink. I think it's appropriate.
You have pink hair, just like the real Pink.
But I had her before. I love her. I think the song's appropriate. The only reason I would consider changing it is to make it a local artist.
Let's make a contest out of it.
Yeah, so if people want to make suggestions.
Any local artist who wants to contribute original theme music to The Spectator.
Well, it could be a song they already have.
Or it could be a song they've already written.
It just kind of has to apply.
You need to email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org with your submissions right now.
Do it right now.
I love that idea.
I thought so too.
Well, you need a theme song that connotes the majestic and magnificent quality that is you. So let's
but again,
figure out.
It doesn't have to be original. It could be a song
that
you have.
It doesn't have to be.
That, you know, it just can't be about breaking up with your boyfriend.
No.
Doesn't
something
really.
Uplifting, something fun, something to get people in the mood for the weekend, which.
Exactly.
Let's now do that.
Okay. All right then. It's a deal. So I'll have to call my friend Chris and say, thanks for calling my music stale.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank
I think it's
you.
Worked
so have
for
I.
You.
It's
worked
danceable.
Well. But, you know, it's always time to try something new.
Exactly.
All righty. So what's happening?
Today, actually, people are already there. It is the Jaguars Veteran Mini Camp. It's at the Everbank Field, obviously. Well, not on the field. It's at the practice things. It starts at 9:50 and it goes to 11:30. It's free parking. And they ask you to pre-register. So you better hurry up and do that.
Do it now, yes.
Do it now. But it's till 11:30. And this is like the first time people will get to see the veterans.
Yeah, so. And people love to come out and see that. This is sort of your first crack at the apple with that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so get out and enjoy that. Yeah, it's hot out there, but you know.
You know, that's all right.
Power
they're out
through
there
it.
In helmets.
That's
so
right, and helmets and pads.
Of course, they're also making lots of money.
Yeah, they're getting paid.
Yeah.
But it's hot. I mean, you got to hand it to them. Okay, so that's happening just in an hour or so.
Yeah, actually right now.
Right now.
Right now. But don't turn off the radio. Sit in your car, listen to the rest of the show, and then go in.
Absolutely.
Tonight is I'm sure you're familiar with the 48-hour film project.
Sure.
Tonight is the last night of the screenings. It's at the Florida Theater. They had three nights. They used to have one day, but now they have so many. They have to do three nights. So this is like the screenings, and then they pick the top winners.
And the 48-hour film project is just a cultural gem in
this
area.
I did
area.
It 2 years. It's crazy.
It is. They have to conceptualize, cast,
they give you a genre,
shoot,
like
edit,
the whole,
and
you
produce.
Have no, like you can't even go in with you know, a little bit of an idea, but they give you silent film. And you're like,
And you have to shoot it and get it done in
and
20,
write it.
And write it in 48 hours.
Crazy.
48 hours, yes. So that's exciting.
Yes. Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Dynamite. You know, he came and did the show a few years ago here.
Oh, I thought he was going to come this time.
He didn't. They didn't pitch me this time, but he is at the Comedy Zone.
Yeah, which is funny because I sent you an email asking if he was coming. You ignored it, and I thought it was just because you didn't want me to come stalk him.
No, I want you to stalk him.
Did you know he was named Time Magazine's Comedian of the Decade in the 70s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he
you
was
did
big.
That?
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely.
He was on the Mike Douglas Show.
And I'm old enough to remember the
Me
Mike
too.
Douglas
what
show.
What about the John Davidson show?
I remember John Davidson.
Dinah, of course.
Yes.
Wow, we're dating ourselves.
Yes, we are, but that's fine.
Right.
That's fine.
That's
now,
right.
Ben just tweeted the show, please contribute to The Spectator's new local song. The current song is stale, so it's official.
I hope you put that in quotation marks.
No, he did not, but it's official. We need a new theme song for you. Okay, so what else is happening?
All right, we have Chuggington Live, The Great Rescue Adventure. It's a Trantastic new musical. I did not make that. Train-tastic.
Train-tastic, I remember Chuggington. Yeah, if you've got little ones at home, get them to this.
Yeah, it's Friday, Times Union Center, 7 p.m. Saturday is the Elvis Rock and Roll Night at the Times Union Center. Apparently Elvis would have been 80, or I guess he's still 80. I mean,
depending on what you believe,
I don't know how that works. he was born 80 years ago.
Isn't that amazing?
January 8th, 2 days after my birthday. Same birthday as David Bowie. Just a little fun fact.
Why am I not surprised? And we're almost out of time.
Oh, because I've been rambling. Go Skate Day. Hemming Park, Seawalk. That's Saturday and Sunday. Seawalk Music Fest at noon. Lots of bands. Mama Blue, Jackson Vegas, Herd of Watts, who could all submit a song.
That's true. One last call out. The Spectator has decreed that she needs a new theme.
I did not decree it. My friend who said my song was stale.
Well, okay. However we want to, whoever the backstory is, we have decreed, you and I, that you need a new theme song. Local musicians, this is your chance. Email your submissions to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org so that Carrie has a flourish befitting her.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I will see you next week.
Yes, you will, unless I see you before.
That's our show. We'll be back tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Next on Diane Rehm, the Pope calls for urgent action on climate change. A look at global environmental policy and the role of the Roman Catholic Church. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. Stay cool out there.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.